Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The opinions expressed in the following podcast are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide education and entertainment about the financial industry and the stock market. Enjoy.
On this episode of Pennies Going In Raw, we talk about adding the market pullback after a scale out. We also discuss trading after a schedule change.
You find out life's this game of pennies.
Oh, you guys know we only have a 40% runner. Hello? 40% right is a f***ing killing.
We've been compliant for too long. It's time we go to war.
I don't have a Roth.
Q knows so much about the market that his brain doesn't have enough room for grammar.
Hey, who told me about IDEX? It's going up a shit ton now.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%.
You asked the exact same question with two words different.
It's like, f***, man. I just got dick whipped for like 20%, and now that f***er's up like 50.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
I'm just making this voice memo to call out unusual whales to a fight.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
Pennies, pennies,
pennies. Going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity of Dips,
and Hugh Honey.
Produced by Vinny
and Christian.
Let's go, baby.
Welcome back to another episode of Pennies Going in Raw. Today is Wednesday, September the 15th, and recording this on Tuesday right now, my birthday.
How old? 27, right?
27, big 27. 27, Clark.
Wow.
Made it.
Dude, any reflection points before we start the podcast?
Reflection points. Starting a podcast, smart idea.
Reflecting on like that today.
Yeah. Reflecting. Okay, yeah. No, I mean, 26, definitely my favorite year ever.
26 was good to you.
Yeah, 26 is good. I mean, before this, it had to be like 18 to 19. I guess it'd be 19, like my first year of college, you know? It's all been downhill from there for me, man, until recently. So
a real bounce back in the chart there.
Yeah.
We made a million, signed a podcast deal.
Yeah, this chart was looking quite, quite rambunctious until around... I'd say around January 2020, it was looking pretty bad. It got some good news. Yeah, it got some good. The news was, it looked bearish, but the company, you know, they
this is like when offerings were a good thing.
Yeah, I was doing some pretty scummy shit. So I guess offering is a good comparison.
Well, happy birthday, bro.
Well, thanks, man. It's been a good year. Like we're seeing right now, the market is like, this is one of those days, if you're not trading large caps, you know, a lot of people complaining. You don't even have to open your broker to know what's going on. CEI is dipping. I'm not in CEI, but I can very clearly tell by just opening Twitter. CEI is on a dip, and you got people saying, healthy pullback. And this is what we were kind of saying on Sunday. I mean, I was mentioning, you know, seemed like a good place to scale out. I don't want people getting upset when it clearly dips, whether it be just a market dip or if it has an offering or something like that. This is the time to add back, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it just comes down to, I think really for a lot of people, having an RSI up on one of your charts is super important, whether it be like the 5 day, 5 minute or the 10 day, you know, just having like that cognizant to say, okay, you know, it is CEI or whatever stock ticker it is, it has just had fantastic momentum and has just had, you know, 5, 10 really great trading days, you know, just to keep you like aware that, hey, really great trading days, it's okay to take some off the top. It's something that we started to become accustomed to, is just like anything, any day that is, that my swing is up more than 3% and there's no news, I've been taking like 5% of my position off. And it's just to like lock some gains in, because we aren't inside that market where everything's just going 1,000%. We're seeing an overextension and then a real pullback. So it just, it makes the most sense to trade around that core right now.
Yeah, it's actually funny. Two things about what you just said. One, I just looked at CEI. It was dipped down to around 130 or so. It actually hit 160. So now, right now, it is green 8% on the day at 150. So yeah, that like people tell you, you know, it is those pullbacks you can add in there. You'd be up a good 15% if you cut the bottom.
No, I was just going to say that CEI, it just like, to not go too far into this, but it's one of those where you just have to cut out the noise. I mean, I'm seeing noise all around. I'm seeing, you know, these fear mongers that are saying, you know, yesterday that said just a healthy pullback and this thing was headed to sub a dollar. If they don't put their money where their mouth is, just cut out the noise. I think that's so important inside, especially the market that we're in right now, but just in general with trading, I can't stand the bickering of both sides all the time. Sometimes it's just so annoying. Like, I just mute Twitter and I just take it off my screen because it's so annoying.
Yeah.
And CEI is a perfect example.
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, you still see it with Wish. Like, people complaining about it every day. It was actually funny. On Zach's happy birthday post to me, someone goes, why is Wish dipping? Yeah, I was like, just tell me happy birthday, motherfucker.
this day's about me, damn it.
So you did mention like you've been taking around 5% off your position with no news. What if it does get news? Does it depend on if it was the news you're looking for and you're taking more off or what?
Yeah, definitely. It really depends with how far I can think it goes. Wait, did I say it right? Yeah. How far I think it can go based on the price action, based on the news. If I'm waiting for news and I read the press release and I'm like, well, this isn't sexy. You guys have to remember that algorithms pick up news because of keywords. So for instance, I think I saw yesterday, I think it was Microsoft. Microsoft bought a company for like $17 million, but because it had like the keywords in there, like software, some other things that were technology based, it was like Facebook was like running 2-3%, and the market cap was affected by billions because of a $17 million buy of a company. So it's things like that where you have to remember that algorithms pick up keywords inside press releases. And I mean, that works to our advantage sometimes and our disadvantage other times. It comes down to, you know, we have some of those penny stocks that just, you know, release press releases to release press releases because they know that algorithms pick up keyword searches. So, but on the flip side, to answer your question, yes, it definitely depends on how the market is. Like, the market's kind of been pulling back the last few days, the last few trading days, like the last real, almost last 2 weeks, the market's kind of been a little choppy. And with that chop comes, it really feels like volatility has just kind of been sucked out. Yesterday, a lot of things were only moving between this 1-2% range, which, you know, is really no fun for me. I think any trader, it's really no fun. So when my swing does get news, I always have to keep myself in check, because especially if the market's in a chop fest, I'll be super excited for it. And I'll, you know, like, oh, finally I can make some money on this swing. And then it doesn't go as far as I think it will. You know, I have to make sure that I understand that, hey, you know, the market doesn't care if I want to make money or not. I just have to play what's in front of me. So it comes down to being able to read that price action and really just not falling in love with it, and understanding that it's okay to, like, yes, I want to get off the bus one stop too late than five stops too early. But at the same time, I'm not going to hold something all the way back down.
Have you kind of noticed with the bus stop analogy, like in this kind of slow market where, especially in those days where it's kind of knifey, do you ever think it may be better to get off the bus stop a little early? Because it seems like that fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth bus stop that you were referring to all happens so fast, as in like the stock will tank, like right as it hits that peak, it's just straight down.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this nine-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, we could take Lyft, for example, the past few days. The volume has been insane on it, which is great if you're, you know, if you can feel it and you can have really good trades. But if you're not feeling Lyft, whether it be from the short side or long side, and you know, you're just not trading it well, I mean, you can quickly get chopped up $1, $2 because of the amount of volume that's happening. So it's one of those where, hey, if everybody's waiting for 11:50 or 12, Get off at 11.89. Get off at 11.40. Like those 10 cents can save you, because the pull to $1 each way can happen so fast. So 100%. And then it comes down to, you know, if I have like 15 different tickers up, I'm just going to take my gains. Or if I know that, for instance, like I was in Egypt and one of my swings got news. So the second it got news, I started selling some, just because I don't want to get cut into that scenario where I, you know, lose Wi-Fi or I lose internet access, and then all of a sudden now I'm holding this thing down and it went from, let's just call it like a 10% or a 15 or a 20% gain to now like a 4% gain once I get Wi-Fi back. So there's definitely a lot of outside variables that can affect it, but especially as we're getting through the end of the year, you know, we want to push it, but we also want to realize that, hey, this year was really great for a lot of traders. A lot of people hit their goals by like the fourth month of the year, and just understand that, hey, even though you were on, let's just say that you were on pace for to do 700% on your account and you only did 300% and your goal was 200%, like, listen, if you hadn't made 300% at the first 4 months and you just did 300% by the end of the year, like, that's still a great freaking year. So don't, you know, there's that fine line between pushing it and pushing it too far and ending up giving back a month, 2 months.
You ever, I know we used to talk about, like, whenever we were going over like basic strategies and stuff like that. We always kind of talked about being more alert guys when it comes to prices. Have you found yourself at all doing any limit sells? Like whenever you do travel, like when you went to Egypt, you know, maybe having that limit sell at that 11.89 or that 11.40, as opposed to the, you know, just the alert. I mean, not for just people traveling, but I mean, for people that may have a job or, you know, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I know that when I'm trading, especially from the short side, I always have bids out so that, you know, if it does snap back up, at least I get filled somewhere, especially when I'm trading like large caps where the like where the spread could be, let's call it like 60, 70, 80 cents, and maybe it goes up $3, but then back down. And it just comes down to low volume and not a lot on the bid, not a lot on the ask. It can be one of those circumstances where it only goes up $3 because there's only 700 shares during those $3. So I want to get lifted at those prices. So yeah, especially when I'm trading from the short side, and especially when I'm trading thinner large caps, I'll always have bids out there or asks out there, sells out there, just so that I can get lifted. The only time that I really don't is if I'm is if one of my swings, you know, I mean, occasionally I'll have like some stupid, crazy ask out there. If I'm waiting for like crazy news and I think that we could just get like one of those crazy gap ups, yeah, I mean, we could, you know, I'll have asks out there. But really, pretty much if I'm trading, especially from the short side or thinner large caps, you know, I'm 100% going to have, you know, some offers out there.
Yeah, I think one of the main reasons that we mainly don't even need the limit buys, limit sells, or even the alerts sometimes just because of how much we're on, you know, our broker, whether it be the phone or whatever. It's just if it hits that price, we'll know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Even when I was in like Egypt, it was like 2 a.m. when the market was closing, and I was still, I mean, I was sitting on my phone. It's just, I think it's one of those things where I don't think some of our brains turn off until like we know that the market's closed. Until like I know that I can't, until I know that I can't just be fucked, I'm pretty much just awake, no matter what the time change difference is. And I think that I really don't think that'll ever change.
Yeah. There's people with 30% of their account in Bitcoin. I don't know how y'all sleep at night.
I really couldn't. I mean, we talked about it in Reno. Someone asked us like, why don't we trade crypto more? And it just comes down to like, I just don't think we'd sleep. I mean, I would just look like a zombie.
Yeah. And getting those few hours of sleep, you definitely need that.
Yeah.
Let me look at you.
handsome, sexy.
Yeah, that's you.
Beautiful.
Kind of going on to another topic. Because, I mean, I've actually had a couple people come to me and say, you know, I've been working from home for so long and just going back to work now, just because I guess they're just ending their remote jobs now. If it wasn't just the fourth week after quarantine like it was in Alabama, they're going back. And that's a big transition as is. But, I mean, just picking up any amount of work or whatever when, let's be honest, they were probably just day trading the whole time at home, obviously is going to come with a major strategy adjustment, you know? Because, I mean, you can't be just, like we just were talking about, staring at it all day. You're going to have those limit buys and everything. Do you kind of want to go into, like, some steps you may want to take as a trader, just picking up this, but, you know, anyone picking up a big responsibility where their trading strategy is going to have to alter a lot?
Yeah. I'm going to take this from two different perspectives. One perspective being, I got asked kind of like, hey, I built up an account to $100,000. I don't feel comfortable trading while working, like while at work, because I don't have the time, as we just talked about, you know, we're in front of our desk or we're on our phone the entire time to open up our brokerage account. You know, so they want to know how to invest in the market, but they don't necessarily have the time to just actively trade. So if I had a $100,000 account and I wanted to invest in the market, but I feel it's overvalued, but let's just say that I didn't want to miss out just in case the market does go to, you know, 500, 550, something like that, then personally what I would do is that I would take 20% and I would just throw it in right now. And then every 20% lower, I would add another 20% to the portfolio, because the one thing that we can be certain, that the one thing inside the time that the market's been a thing, the market has never not gone higher. So that literally means that your chances of the market seeing a new high are really good, because it's never not gone higher. The only pigs, the only people that get suckered into really selling, and the only people that lose money when they invest in the market, are the people that sell. I had like a neighbor who sold all of, like, literally their entire 401k at the very bottom of 2008. They lost like 200 grand, which was, you know, again, like a large chunk of their portfolio, and they sold it at the very bottom. So as long as you don't need that money, like let's say like the next 10, 15 years, you know, you're probably going to see a new high in the market.
Now, of course, my mom, the definition of diamond hands, just last year, so in 2000 or 99 or whatever, she had a $50,000 account and turned it into, I think, like 250 or something off of the dot-com bubble. So, I mean, it's not like crazy.
It's in the blood, baby. It's in the blood.
So she turned all that money into so much more, and it crashed, and she held it. She just got back to 50,000 like 9 months ago. And whenever they were visiting me this weekend, she told me it was up to 90,000. I'm like, please take your cost basis off. So yeah, she's racked up now. 20 years it took her, but she's back up like 80%, man.
That's insane. So is that what you think? That's where inside your blood it comes from, selling too early most of the time, like just taking gains on anything green.
Yeah, I'm not going to end up like that. I'm not going to wait 20 years to get my money back. I don't know.
That's so funny. But yeah, so I think from the investment standpoint, if I were, you know, if I had a certain amount of money to invest in the market, it would be 20% in now, and then every 20% lower, I would throw in another 20%. So let's just say off high. So if the market goes up 20% and then down 20%, that's when I invest. So it's basically off highs. And the way that you're doing that is that you're scaling in effectively and you're systematically scaling in. But at the same time, if the market decides to go another 30%, you're still going to make some money. So that's what I would handle from an investment standpoint. If I'm going back to work and I used to work at home, the way that I would probably handle it is that it's definitely an adjustment period. So on the West Coast, you can trade for a few hours and then go into work. That is the benefits of working on the West Coast, is because you can wake up, trade the market from 6:30 to let's call it 8:30 a.m. Because the market opens at 6:30 out there, and then go into work. I mean, that gives some serious volatility and some serious opportunity.
Hell, you could be trading before you go to bed on the West Coast. That bitch opens at like 1 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, so the West Coast definitely gives a better opportunity simply because the trading hours are just, they give more opportunity out there. You know, on the East Coast, the market opens up at 9:30. Most people are already inside, you know, they're already at work at that time. So it's different. Wow, dude, life is getting killed right now.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's one that, like, you see everyone on, like, everyone was on it today, and eventually, man, it's gonna, like, it always happens, like, when everyone's on it, all the Discords, all the Twitters are all on it, and everyone knows it's a day trade, kind of, and then, I mean, that was a pure day trade play, correct?
Yeah, but sorry guys. I mean, I'm literally just watching this. I mean, this thing just took like a 60 cent, 70 cent, a dollar beat.
Yeah.
This thing just,
it just crossed a pretty crucial line. But I mean, like, those are some of those like crazy dip pullbacks that you can buy. I mean, not if you're working like the segment's about. Unless you're on your lunch break.
But this comes back to what we just talked about
you
having
would
offers
not be able
if I was short.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I was short, I mean, I would have some ducks out there and just, you know, I mean, that thing just, I mean, that was 1.2 million shares just got dumped into the bid, which just took it down an entire dollar. I mean, that's one of those instances where you can have those bids out on the short side and get filled real quick.
So one thing, whenever you were talking about that, Is having bids on the short side not kind of dangerous? Like, when knowing that, you know, there is really no limit to your downside.
Yeah, I mean, so the way that I short is completely different. Like, I'm really risk averse because I lost so much from the short side when I was just starting out. So most of the time, it's one of those things where I don't want to go too crazy, but most stocks could literally go up 1,000% and I still wouldn't blow up my account anymore because I would go so heavy on the short side. So it's one of those where like I can let them breathe a little bit and, you know, kind of let them get higher. I would never let them do that now, but I potentially could let that happen. So for the most part is that I'm usually just looking to, you know, take quick gains on the short side, you know, and have bids out there to so that they can get lifted.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How do you kind of avoid getting in like these? Obviously, you know, we were talking about life just being a day trade, but you'll still kind of get that itch. Is this just something you have to completely avoid if you are like back at a job, something you can't like look at the computer the whole time?
Yeah, I mean, you either have to look at the computer or you need to understand your broker. You need to know, I mean, you need to have that stop loss out there and you need to like you need to respect that stop loss. But no, I mean, if you can't look at your screen the entire time, then, you know, there's really no point in day trading because something like life where this dollar pool, I mean, if you had, you know, let's just say that you had 10,000 shares. I mean, you just took down like, you know, 10% of your account if you were all in. So it's definitely not one of those where you can do that. If I were trading and I was working, I would stick to really the highest quality trades that are not crowded because, you know, with crowded trades, that's what you're going to see is that on red days, when the market's red, you're going to see big pullbacks. And when the market's green, you know, it's not the same when the market's up 2%. The swings aren't going, you know, up like 15%. But when the market's red 2%, I mean, the swings are going down 15%. You know what I mean? Like it's just like that emotional trading and the offset's not there. So I would stay away from retail crowding. I would pick the highest quality. So I'm talking like close trading as close to cash, you know, cash per share as possible. You know, I would probably stick away from something that doesn't have a lot of cash, chance of dilution. You know, the catalyst is not do or die. So I would stay away from phase threes or, you know, really, really any bio. I mean, it really has to be quality because you're not going to know if you're green or red until after work, until the market is basically closed. You know, I know that like some of the jobs out there, you know, sometimes you don't even get your phone. Like if you work in aviation or something, sometimes they make you lock up your phone. So I would really stick to swings, least risk, least possibility of dilution. and it's going to be an adjustment period. So it comes back to when you were first learning, if you were a big day trader and you were playing with beer money, same thing. Go back to work and only trade with like 3% of your account in the beginning so that you can understand, you know, how this is going to work and you can adjust to that period.
Yeah, and also trading while working is also one of those things where you have to maybe have the most discipline as a trader, because you, if you do get that time to take a day trade, you have to say, okay, well, you have to look at the chart and know how long does it, is it usually the intervals between these dips and everything? Because if you only have 30 minutes, you can't hold it and have that patience. You know, you have to really find, and I think knowing the good swings, not being, like you said, phase three data, because, you know, you log on, your account's down 60%, but also the same rules apply when it comes to needing to scale in and everything. I mean, if someone was, oh, Wish is, you know, the new swing, you see it at 12 or whatever, you know, now you're down 40%, you know, if you just went all in. So, I mean, the same rules still apply, even if you are finding these A1 setups.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, I really think that's one of those where, you know, it really has to be quality over quantity. I mean, listen, if you get adjusted and it's one of those where you have a meeting, let's take the East Coast. If you can plan all your meetings for like 8 to 9 a.m. and somehow you're able to figure out how to trade the first like 40 minutes and you can squeeze in, you know, a quick little runner or something, that's fine. But it's still going to be an adjustment period. I think like that's the biggest thing that we can preach, is that it's an adjustment period, that, you know, it's not fine. We all sit here, and even if like, let's just say that I'm watching a movie or something over here, or even if I'm playing Xbox, you know, like I'm still right here. Even if you have alerts set on your phone, it's still one of those things where you miss one vibration, hell, you miss one ringtone, I mean we just go back to life. I mean, we're watching life right now go down like 15% off highs in 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things. If you're okay, even if you have one of those office jobs where you can kind of, you know, get away with trading at it, your boss calls you, you can't get out. Oh man. Or
it just takes one.
Or even if you just have that stop loss and then you come back and you realize, oh wow, I was 5 cents away and now it's up 15%. Like you hear Bob say in the intro, like, oh, I sold and what is it? It's like, and then I get dick kicked and it's up 15% or whatever. But no, I mean, that you're going to take some slaps in the face as you adjust to that one. But I mean, it's like, honestly, like going through market tuition again, but less. I mean, you're going to learn a totally new strategy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the great thing, is that if you were thinking about quitting your job when you were going back to work, this is a really good opportunity to learn a strategy. And it, 6 more months of making side, let's just call it like side income, or, you know, steady income, can really change the difference. I mean, that gives you that much more money to play with. That gives you that much more of a buffer to learn. You know, it's really one of those things where, you know, if you can stick it out for 6 months and just make like 10, 15% of your account, it's not so much about making on your account as it is just building up like that little
confidence,
buffer.
Not only this, the fact that if you know you can do it while working, you did it whenever you were home, you know, you know you'll be able to conquer the market in whatever situation. And just like, even when it comes to your 1 hour lunch break, if you were more of a day trader, hey, be valuable. I mean, like, use your time super wisely, and hell, trade on your, I mean, that's what I was doing when I was working. I was trading my ass off on my lunch break and whenever I was on the clock too.
Yeah. No, exactly. So yeah, I think if I were going back to work, those are the two scenarios. You know, if you want to just purely invest, or, you know, I mean, that's how I would handle it. Or if you want to actually trade, but everything's going to be an adjustment. I mean, I think that's the most important thing, is that even if you are a really good trader, you know, it's a whole different world having to actually go to work.
Yeah, no kidding. And I know a lot of people, you know, you guys are probably thinking, well, shit, we go work every fucking day and we're still having to trade. And to you guys, I say, salute. Shit's not easy. So going forward, I mean, you're seeing spot, you're seeing our swings pull back again. Rise, it was like, oh, is the swingers market back? And then it's like, oh, well, if it is, well, these are good entries again. Or are they just going to keep getting worse? So, I mean, you kind of base it off SPY a little bit, and you're seeing it, you know, it passed 450 and now it's kind of teetering under it and just going back and forth. Do you think we break out past that 450 mark and continue, or are we going to see a little more play time around this area?
It came out this morning that the SEC is going to release the report on AMC, GME, all that. So I think that the market is kind of lining up with that, because I think everyone's a little worried, because this really does set a precedent. We've never, you know, there's been cases, but we've never really seen something like GameStop. You know, we've never really seen the kind of action that we saw. So I think that the market's kind of waiting for this to come out. And I mean, this could be a great opportunity for SPY. you know, nothing's really changed as far as interest rates, you know, tax season's coming up, but we're not like inside that, like they call like the tax selling phase yet. So I really think that it's going to be one of those things where, you know, let's see what the conclusion and what the SEC says about GME and AMC. And then it let the market, like I said, the market really feels like the volatility just kind of got sucked out. So it might be one of those things where it's like a quick 2-3 weeks of like max pain, bring the market down 5-6%. And then, you know, we go and they release the GameStop theory and all that, and then we just go back on our way. Like it might be one of those scenarios, which is probably what's going to happen. I mean, nothing's really changed, but I also think that when everyone's now calling for the top, and we've really been inside this, like when the market goes down 3%, everybody's calling for top. So, and I just don't think that we're there yet. I think that it's going to be a little bit of max pain that you're going to get everybody excited for the market to crash, you know, again, just like we saw during the election, you know, bring it down 5-6%. And then all of a sudden, you know, the market rips back up on whatever it might be. You know, there was also talk about the tax, about how New York City, if you are inside the highest tax bracket in New York City, you could potentially be paying 61%. And I just think it comes back to that game of, you know, this week it's 61%. Next week it's back down to, you know, 47% or whatever. So I just think that right now everything's, everybody's looking to be a bear. You know, you have the taxes, you have the GME report. Everybody's looking for the market to flush, and the market may flush, but I don't think it's one of those where everybody's calling for like, what is it, 400 again or 375? I just don't see that right now.
Yeah, I actually think we should do a little thing, and we can put you know, some rules on it and have a better outline for it maybe next week. Like a put your money where your mouth is, split the pot. Everyone puts in a guess and $5, and maybe we'll have like a cash app for it or something. And you guess the price of SPY on the last day of the year. Anyone that wants to on FinTwit, and half of it will go to a charity and the other half will go to the whoever has like the closest one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, this is the craziest thing. Okay. The market is still only 1.8% off of highs. Like it's just been down. It's just been down a little bit for 4 or 5 days, which is the craziest thing. I mean, everybody is like, oh no, like, yo, the market's crashing. The market's ready to dump, you know, stuff like that. We're still not even 2% off of highs. So like, let's relax a little bit. You know, a pullback is healthy. You know, like I honestly, I wouldn't mind to pull back to 440 in the market, and then curl back up, and you know, let's hit the last quarter hard. I mean, I wouldn't mind that.
500, baby.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy that, you know, 2% off highs, and we're the fear mongering is ridiculous out there. I mean, I really thought that we were close to like 3 or 4% off highs, but yeah, I mean, bring it down to 440, 435, and then yeah, let's curl back up and hit 500 end of year.
I mean, just recently we were going for 420 by 420. I mean, and here we are, 450. So we'll see.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I've got some celebrating I got to do. Make sure to give us a 5-star, show us some love, like all my Instagram pictures. And yeah, we love you guys. Have a great week.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf-Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.